You are invited to the Anxiety Recovery and Deep Rest Super Conference, a free online event happening October 20th, 2025. The ultimate healing event for anxiety and rest is almost here. Join this free online Anxiety Recovery and Deep Rest Super Conference to learn how to recognize signs of an overactive nervous system and explore powerful strategies to restore calm and improve your overall well-being. Please don't miss this rare opportunity to learn from 60-plus of the world's most respected doctors, psychologists, scientists, healers, researchers, who will all speak on the following topics and more: generalized and social anxiety, insomnia and sleep disorders, chronic stress and burnout, hypervigilance and overthinking, PTSD and complex trauma, emotional dysregulation, somatic therapy, nervous system rewiring, mindfulness, recovery practices. There's so much more. Sign up for this Anxiety and Deep Rest Super Conference free of charge, beginning October 20th to the 26th. Link to sign up is in the show notes.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome, Lindsay, to the podcast again.
Thank you, Monique. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. I always get so excited and I'm so honored. We had a little chat before and I'm just so grateful to be able to talk about the things that we talk about, because I know because I hear from the audience, I hear from people, what an impact our conversations have. So thank you for being here.
No, it's my great pleasure.
So today I thought that we could talk about emotionally immature mothers and daughters and sons, and talk about really how that can impact a daughter, like what that feels like, kind of how that shows up. And I'm wanting to talk about that because I know that that is the experience of many. Sometimes we don't have the words for it. We just have feelings. And when we hear some explanation, it helps us give context and helps us understand a little bit more. So maybe first, for those who are not, like, they might be new to this, maybe we can start by you explaining, what is an emotionally immature mother?
Okay, yeah. Well, emotional immaturity is, you can think of it like a part of development, a line of development. For instance, we have an intellectual line of development, we have a social line of development. And, you know, little children are very different from adults and they have to grow into that. Well, it's the same thing for emotional maturity. You start out pretty egocentric, not really in command of your emotions. You can't think ahead. You can't control your impulses. And over time, you develop that ability to kind of be a more self-aware and more in control person. But you also learn how to have good relationships with other people and how to channel your energies in ways that make life better and better for you instead of worse and worse. Okay. So when I say emotionally immature or mature, I'm thinking about a continuum. And at one end, there's high emotional immaturity. And at the other, there's what I call sufficient emotional maturity. And I say sufficient or adequate because, to my mind, there's no such thing as the emotionally mature person. There's always a bit of play in where we are on this continuum. Like, you may have a day when you're not feeling well, or you're tired, or maybe you're just stressed, and your level of emotional maturity will move more toward the immature end of things, because none of us are at our best when we're not well resourced. And along the same lines, the emotionally immature person, if things are going their way, they're feeling very well resourced, they're getting what they want, they have the energy to stretch and appear more mature than they really can sustain. So that's one of the best reasons for dating people for a long time I know of, because emotionally mature behavior is hard to hold if you don't have the structure inside to pull it off. So what we would look for in terms of how to identify someone that had problems with emotional immaturity would be to look at how egocentric or self-involved they were. In other words, are they able to take the point of view of other people? Do they automatically seem to be concerned about other people's feelings? Do they remember what you said? Do they refer back to something that you said? In other words, are you being taken in by them and held and understood and interested in? Or are they like a boomerang continually returning to, let's make it more about me, or now that I've listened to you, let me tell you my thing? And that egocentrism is like all roads lead to Rome. Anything that comes up has to do with them relating it to their own personal experience. So that egocentrism is, you know, like a little child. Like, we expect 3-year-olds to be that way. We don't expect 43-year-olds to be that way, but a lot of them are. And I just want to mention that emotional immaturity shows up under stress, and it shows up in intimate emotional relationships. So that means that you might be very intellectual. You might be the most intelligent person. You might be a great success in your field. You might be very social. You could be the president of the PTA. You could be the most popular kid in high school. You could have all these social skills, but that doesn't affect your level of emotional maturity. And it will show itself when you get under stress or when you're in an emotionally intimate relationship. So some of the things that affect the nature of your relationship with these people is that they have very low empathy. Gosh, I mean, we all, in this day and time, we all know how to appear empathic. Okay, there's a lot of modeling of that everywhere. But they just don't feel what other people are feeling because they're so self-absorbed. And they also have a hard time imagining things from another person's point of view. So they don't try on your viewpoint or how you might be likely to see things. They also treat reality as kind of an optional interpretation according to what's important to them and according to how they feel. So they'll interpret reality as being about what it feels like to them. They're not objective, and they feel no need whatsoever to be fair about it. They see it as it is what it is. I know what it is because you made me feel this way. And that is very frustrating to deal with, because if you have any objectivity yourself, and if you're able to reflect on your own behavior, it's pretty hard to believe that emotionally immature people don't do either one of those things. They're self-referential, meaning everything's about me, but they would not think to ask themselves, you know, did I cause part of this problem? Was it something I said? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. No, because they're so defensive. They get hurt so easily. They will accuse you of being oversensitive. They will accuse you of taking things too seriously. But boy, if you watch their behavior, you will see how ultra sensitive and touchy they are about anything that might affect their self-esteem. So we have to realize that when we're dealing with emotionally immature people, you're probably going to feel like you have to really watch your step, like walking on eggshells, because their emotions are so easily tripped. and they have a hard time setting their emotions aside to look at anything objectively or from another person's point of view. So I'm sure we'll touch on some other things, but those are the main characteristics.
I mean, just listening to you, I was exhausted, and yet exhausted. And yet this is the reality of many of what we're going to talk about. Many people are in relationships with a parent like that, a mother. And I, when you think about it, your mother is the first mirror that you have. And we are made to be able to, we're supposed to attach to this. And I think about not being seen inside, not being able to see the inside. That's really what I want to look at and talk to you about, in that, how does that present itself? How does that impact a person when you have a caregiver, someone so close, and yet they don't see that you have your own feelings and ideas and point of view? What does that do?
Well, you know, it's remarkable that we all have that need to be seen. And, you know, that seems like such a vague term, but it's the best one I know of. It's like, do they get me? Do they understand me? Do they see past my clumsy efforts to express myself into my heart and guess correctly with their empathy? Can they guess what I'm going through? And can they step in with a response that is going to help me feel calmed, feel soothed, feel like I'm not in this by myself, feel like there's nothing odd or strange about me, that I can be understood? You know, a lot of people that have emotionally immature parents, Monique, feel like they are not understandable, which is a tragedy, because they feel like I can't reach other people with my true self. And so therefore, it must be me. There's something about me that is just so different and so unable to be understood that I'm kind of stuck with feeling like I'm on the outside and like I don't really, really, really belong. Okay. But that's because that early emotional connection and that empathic connection hasn't been adequately secured for that child in the relationship. And we'll say with the mother, we could say with the primary caregiver, if we want to keep, you know, using a mouthful every time. But if we're here to talk about mothers and daughters today, let's just say mothers, and keep in mind, I mean, primary caretaker. The mother could be a father. It could be a grandmother. Okay, it's anybody that has the primary responsibility for welcoming that child into the world and staying with them in their experience as they go through things growing up. So that's what I consider a mother.
Yeah. And when you use the word welcome, I think that's such a good word, because when you're not seen, and I agree with you, seen is the word, we feel invisible. We feel we don't matter. And like you were saying, children are egocentric, so I must not be worth looking at or being with.
Yes, I mean it's like it's just a matter of direct experience. I mean, how big is a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old's world? You know, it's pretty much inside the house or maybe at daycare, but yeah, they're very limited, and that's why in all the studies that I've looked at on resilience, one of the things that keeps coming up is that the kids who are most resilient, even if they came from very difficult backgrounds, would report that there was a teacher, a relative, a lady down the street, somebody that fulfilled that function of being happy to see the child, of understanding the child, listening, being attentive, being present. And, you know, there's been so much neuroscience research on what happens between the hemispheres of the brain when you're doing that kind of connecting. And there's some beautiful things in the work of Alan Shore and other people that he references in his work. But there are places in the right hemisphere of the mother's brain that resonate with the right hemisphere of the baby's brain. and they can see that their hemispheres are talking to each other. There is an attunement, a resonance that's set up. And that's what we all feel. I mean, we can do it with our dogs.
I was thinking the same thing. You know how our dogs, like I was, as you were speaking, I saw my dog when my eyes get big. And then he does, when he's seen, he does his cute little walk because he's happy that he's seen.
Exactly. Yeah, it's that right brain resonance that we have. And mammals have that. It's like with Stephen Porges' work on the ventral vagal nerve, that yeah. We have this social engagement nerve in the body that is designed to put us into that state of resonance with other people, which automatically calms us and soothes us. I mean, it regulates, I mean, literally regulates our heart rate, our blood pressure, you know, all the signs physiologically of stress.
So then we talked about growing up and not experiencing that and feeling like something is not right with me, or maybe it's me. In what other ways do you find that it can show up in daughters or adult daughters?
Let's think about, too, about what happens inside the emotionally immature mother when she's confronted with the relationship with the child. Okay. So if you think that the emotionally immature person has a kind of a limited and kind of brittle sense of self, they really haven't been through the kind of attachment themselves or the kind of growing inside that we would have hoped for them early in their lives. And so it's always as though there's something at the core of them that is also unmet in them. Okay. And I think of it as they've had something happen, or maybe, you know, maybe it's, maybe they were born this way. I don't know what the causality is, but there's something in them that feels like one step away from a feeling of annihilation or a feeling of profound insecurity, of being lost, of being unattached. I mean, I think it's something as bad as that, that they are defending against. And one of the things that tends to activate that fear of whether it's a fear of abandonment or annihilation or being rejected or whatever it is emotional intimacy. Because emotionally immature people really have problems with emotional intimacy. And part of that is because of what I said about the sense of self. It's like way deep down, there's no there there. It's not like, and this is what the children of these kinds of parents always try to do. They try to like go in there and get at the core. You know, they want to get close to their parent. They want to get to know their parent. They want to have something real with the parent. Meanwhile, the parent is like in a panic because they don't investigate themselves. They don't have self-reflection. They just want to get through life and keep things at a distance that upset them and have everybody, you know, take care of their feelings for them and make them feel better. So it's really hard for them to listen to a child who's trying to get close to them or trying to share something that's emotionally real or emotionally intense. They can't handle it. And so sometimes the more you try to reach them, the more psychologically they're pulling back in an attempt to defend themselves against this fear of, oh my gosh, we're going to open up this, you know, yawning chasm of unmet needs, and I'm not going there. So they end up trying to derail that kind of conversation. And of course, they often get very defensive and will make excuses or project blame, anything to get off the hot seat. And then unfortunately, lots of times the adult child thinks, well, we got to communicate. We got to get in there together and try to, you know, work this out. It's like they are really having a hard time with that. And the more you try to do that, the more insecure they're feeling.
We've had a few interviews, you and I, and you've probably said that, but I only caught it the last interview when I told you that I was talking with someone and they're emotionally immature. And the way that they responded to something good news, positive, they had no reaction. And this is when you talked about that, how it was very intimate and it was too much for them.
Yes.
And that's when I began to really realize that. And I'm glad that you're explaining it again now, so that the natural inclination is to keep trying and keep digging, like you said, and to try to get in there. But maybe if they understand a little more that it really is a threat to them, and that's why it's so hard to get in there, it can maybe help them understand why it's difficult.
It's destabilizing. Emotionally immature people in a relationship need the other person to do two things for them. One is to help keep them emotionally stabilized, and the other is to help build their self-esteem. So it's like, don't say or do anything that is going to emotionally arouse me in a way that's going to make me feel destabilized. Certainly do not criticize me or give me a hard time, because, you know, I can't handle it. And then secondly, you know, make sure that you think twice about everything you say to me, because my self-esteem is so brittle that I'm going to really get upset with you if you threaten that. It's like they're saying, like, I've worked long and hard to build up this facade. Yeah. Don't be rocking the boat here.
No.
Yeah.
And this comes back to even what I was asking you before we started. How does that impact? You just described it all, not being able to say what you really want to say in fear of destabilizing them or realizing that they might get really upset. So you keep your feelings to yourself. I heard a little bit of possibly parentification.
I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, and help you feel satisfied longer, support healthy, sustainable weight management, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
A little bit of that, you know, because you're trying to manage their emotions. Just so much seems to be focused on them and managing them instead of the other way around, meaning we lose the ability to really know who we are because we're so busy trying to manage them.
Absolutely. And it's lots of times people who come into psychotherapy, for instance, with a family issue like this, they will be a very internalizing kind of personality. In other words, they will try to understand things. They will try to figure it out. They'll try to come up with a solution. They take responsibility. Like I say, they look for solutions. And when you do that, you end up trying to get it to come out. It's like trying to make an equation come out right, where you try really hard to figure out what you've done and then to work it out with this other person. And that approach is something that ends up frustrating both people, because the adult child is not getting what they want. And then the parent is, you know, as we've said, very threatened by that.
as a daughter myself of that, I know the impact. And I don't know if you've heard this from the women that you've worked with who've had experience with that. I think that you're really left with a mother wound. It's like there's an emptiness of what should have been there,
yeah,
and wasn't there.
Yeah. And we can feel that. I mean, isn't it amazing that children can feel the absence of that? It's really very, very basic. If you're just talking about mammals, let alone people. But Jonk Panksepp, who has done a lot of work with like the basic emotions of animals and people, and one of those is care. Okay. And so I just figure that we have evolved to know in our almost at a cellular level that there is this thing called care, which is that our mothers think that we are just the cutest, most yeah. precious little thing there ever was, and they are besotted with us, and we are their heart walking around outside their body, and they are crazy about us. We're yeah. precious to them.
Yeah.
I think that we are born with that expectation, and it must be, I love to think of this, there must have been a lot of good parenting for millennia, for this to have be such a, like an inborn expectation, and for us to feel the absence of that so keenly. That tells me that's like practically in our DNA, and that got established so long ago. And it tells me that originally, that must have been a high survival, I guess you could say, asset for animals, that the mothers were that way toward their offspring.
Yeah. I've seen those videos, maybe you have too, where you'll see like orangutan with the baby and they're just beside themselves with joy. And it's just so precious and beautiful. And it just seems so natural. And then I know we can't answer this question, but then a lot of us are like, okay, so I didn't experience that, but why am I able to be this way with my child?
Yeah. You know? Well, we could speculate that emotionally immature person, either whether it was something innate, something congenital, that there was something the matter there. There was something, some neurodivergence perhaps, or who knows what could have happened. Or that they could have had trauma in their life, which sensitized them to this kind of anxiety about loss, about closeness, about their being able to manage their emotions, about whether other people are trustworthy. If that has happened in the generation before you, it's very likely that that person has really suffered some things that render them unable to go forward in their emotional development. But when you come along in your generation, you may suffer some of the effects of that. But I've just noticed this with my psychotherapy clients, that if you have enough sensitivity and perceptiveness, there seems to be an ability to like call out the best in the parent, and also to notice and solicit attention from other people. So that I think some children are able to get that nurturing and get that connection going, maybe because they're very responsive, maybe because they just notice who in the environment is responding to them, but they're very perceptive and they're very sensitive. So they've got their radar out about where to get what they need. And I think maybe other children are not as able to kind of exploit their environment in that way. And consequently, they don't get all that they could get, even from the emotionally immature parent. But let's say that sensitive, perceptive child figures out real fast that if I control myself and I'm not too needy and I pay attention to mom and I ask her how she's feeling today, that I get something back. And they're able to, you know, learn the system. Of course, that's often at great cost to themselves, you know, because they're putting some of their needs aside, and they're also shutting down their own self-awareness.
Right.
Because that's really not a useful thing when you're having for survival to pay close attention to how someone else feels.
Yeah. And then they've already set up the pattern for people pleasing. It's hard later on to break that.
Yes, it is. It's very hard because it's a defense mechanism.
Exactly.
So yeah, I may have said this before, with defense mechanisms, they happen, they pop into existence before you feel the anxiety. They wouldn't do you any good if you felt the anxiety and then you had the defense mechanism. If you're feeling anxiety and then you start people-pleasing, you have a little bit of room there to do some change if you self-reflect and could say, oh, I'm feeling, that made me nervous. Now I can feel myself starting to want to take care of that. Now that's a perfect opportunity for change, right? But if it's a true defense mechanism, you are taking care of that other person and saying the right thing before you even knew you.
And that's the survival strategy. Exactly. It's reflexive. It's so fast.
And a good thing too, because otherwise we'd be awash in anxiety and impulse.
So let's talk a little bit about what are some things that we can do. I don't even like to use the word healing anymore or healed. I like healing. It's healed. Like you're going to get somewhere and then you're not going to feel it anymore. You're healed. So I like to use the word, and I think I used it with you before. I said, what can we do to help sort of soften some of those wounds and get some of our needs met? What would you suggest?
I love that imagery of softening, because I associate softening with flexibility. You know, and if something doesn't work, we can change it. We're not looking for the magic potion. We're looking for something that makes it a little bit better. Yeah. So what I suggest to people is, if you're new to this kind of way of thinking, by all means, do whatever you have to do to know that you tried to be seen, you tried to be understood, you tried to communicate, you gave it a good shot. But if that doesn't work, then what I encourage people to do is to understand that you may be like sitting on a pile of emotional assets that your parent does not have, okay? It's like you have riches and resources, if you're adequately emotionally mature, that they don't have and they can't get. So yes, try to self-express, try to be known by your parent. Try to have a deeper relationship. But if that doesn't seem to be working or they don't seem to be listening, that's where you really get into this thing of coming to grips with the possibility that they may not be able to. That's part of the softening. And it's a terrible thing to come to grips with, because you just can't believe it. You know, you can't believe that your own mother or your own friend or your own spouse can't believe that they can't do what you can do, which may be to reflect on your behavior, to have empathy, to try to work things out, to be fair. If you have it, you assume everybody else has it. And it takes a lot of processing and coming to grips with the painful reality that this may not be something they're able to do. And once that happens, where you can face the possibility that this person really can't do any better than they've been doing, you have the opportunity at that point to decide, how are you going to take care of yourself in response to this? And what kind of relationship, on what terms, are you going to be willing to have for your own health? And I mean physical as well as mental health. So you might decide that, you know, certain boundaries are needed. You may decide that there is an optimal time to spend on a visit or an optimal closeness. That, in other words, you won't talk about certain topics with them. Or if they insist, you may put a stop to it or you may have to leave. So you begin to take care of yourself, knowing that this is not going to be good for you, and you have to do whatever you have to do to kind of manage the relationship instead of trying to change the other person. it's just, if I want to reiterate, because when I say that we have the urge to change the other person, or we think that they're going to get better, we can finally make them understand, it's because the realization of something being this intractable or this basic, that someone could truly be less mature emotionally than you are, that is such a painful thing. It's so final. Yeah. And it's very hard to see that, especially when you have thought of them as your mother, like the wise, capable grown-up who has been the authority, who knew right from wrong, who told you what was what. That's really hard to see them in a more objective kind of way. It can be extremely painful to do that. So it can take a long time.
A long time.
Your behavior can actually become healthier. You can make many changes. You can get it sort of just the way you want it. Things are working well. And there's still going to be this little kid in you that's hoping that maybe they will be able to change, that they'll be, but what you're really looking for, they'll be able to mature to the point where they can take another person's feelings into account in a way that changes their behavior. And that's what's not likely to happen.
I know that it's a long journey, and processing and trying to make sense of it, and it'll take as long as it takes. And I know that I was angry for a long time. And then I realized that underneath that anger, like, why, was grief. Like, just that I didn't get a mom. I didn't get the empathy. And there's grief with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But even before the grief, though, there's the realization. And that's almost an existential crisis. You know, it's not just that you're losing the fantasy, you know, the fantasy that they're more able to give than they really are, or the fantasy that you may be able to change them. It is an existential encounter about the nature of reality. When you begin to see that this person who looks like you, acts like a normal human being, may be limited in these very important areas of emotional connection and intimacy, that shakes really the world, your view of the world. Like, how can this be? She must have it. It must be in there somewhere. But maybe not. I mean, that's why I say try. If nothing else, it helps you to do that exercise of trying to be understood, trying to communicate after all this time, trying to be known by them, trying to exist as an individual. But if that doesn't work, yes, then there is, a reordering of the existential nature of things that is very hard to do until you have really digested and worked through this idea that you may not, or that they may not be able to meet you where you are.
I don't want to put like a bow on it or anything like that. But one of the things that has been helpful, hasn't replaced a mother, but has been helpful for myself, is some of the friends that I've met and have been in my life over the decades have replicated how I would imagine the feeling state of someone who cares deeply. So, for example, I have these two friends. They've been with me for decades. And when they see me, their eyes open wide.
Yeah.
And I feel felt. I feel seen.
Yes.
And they show empathy and I show empathy, and there's reciprocity. And so they don't replace a mother, but I get a little taste of what it can feel like to be in a healthy relationship where you're seen.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, there's some place in that book about the adult children where I say, is it, you know, this is all very painful work at times, okay?
Of course.
Is it worth it to get a chance to live two lives? One part of your life where you thought it was all your fault and there was something the matter with you, and this idealized person, your parent, wasn't coming through for you. And then the realization of what this might be about through understanding emotional immaturity. And then you're living this whole other life where you do understand what's needed. You do begin to appreciate these qualities in other people that are very mothering. They are very nurturing. And you get to live your life in awareness and appreciation of how precious that is, right? Because you love them, you love your friends back in a way that, I mean, I don't know that you would have the experience to appreciate just what all they're giving you if you hadn't had another one growing up. So I said, you know, is it worth the cost in order to have two lives? And I think for the joy that a person gets from being treated well, from being seen, I mean, it seems like it's kind of doubled up from a person who's always had it, who, you know, just sort of assumes this is the water that they're swimming in. Because it's such a beautiful thing. I think it's really lovely that you can see it for what it is and just eat it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is healing. That is healing. So it's been so good, Lindsay. It always is to talk with you. Let's talk a little bit about your new book that's coming up. Tell us about it.
Okay. Yeah, I decided after writing, I guess there are 7 books in the series about emotionally immature parents and finding your true self. But I began to think about, instead of, there's this old analogy of mental health services as being, you know, there's someone upstream who's throwing children into the river. And then the mental health workers are downstream and they're pulling the children out of the river. Okay. So they're like, let's move upstream and get at the place where they're throwing children in the river and stop that instead of rescuing them. Then I began to think about, okay, so what do you want to tell parents about how they can give their children what they need emotionally so that they can grow up, so that they can be relatively emotionally mature parents to their children. And I came up with the idea of how to raise an emotionally mature child. So that book will be coming out in April of next year. And it's about the attitudes of parents or primary caregivers that will facilitate them building up emotional maturity so that they will have awareness of other people's inner world and their own inner world and empathy and all these qualities that are so important for not only to have a rewarding relationship life, but these things really add up to success in the real world. Because it's like you have your batteries included. You can be adaptable, flexible. You can think complex thoughts. You can be creative, play with solutions, all these things that the rigid, emotionally immature person has trouble with. You can provide an environment for your child where they get all that they need to become, you know, a really well-rounded person that's adaptable.
Sounds so good. All right, so you're in the process of writing it now?
The book is actually finished. I'm in the final process. But, you know, like in publishing, everything takes forever.
That's so good. I may have you back then to talk about that, because that's going to be, my goodness, that's going to be so helpful for so many people.
Hoping that I'll be able to give people what they're curious about in terms of how to think of their children and how to approach the whole business of parenting. So
good.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you. Thank you for everything you put out into this world. You're so appreciated.
Thank you so much, Monique. Thank you for having me.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.